about the time after sunset till dark, till Tzeis Kochavim being about 18 minutes on the towards the higher end. There, whereas the Gemara in Sachim speaks about it being much, much more, anywhere from 90 to 120 minutes. And that was based on the Gemara in Shabbos saying that from sunset till dark is three quarters of a meal. That's in Shabbos, and three quarters of a meal, we said, depending on whether it's 22.5 minutes or 24 minutes per meal, is about 18 minutes. Whereas in Sachin, the Gemara says that between sunset and dark is, according to, let's say, the less stringent opinion, I guess, it's four meal. It's either four or five meal. Four or five meal. And that would end up anywhere from 90 minutes to 120 minutes.
How many feet did we establish again that a meal was?
It's about 6 cents of a mile.
Six
cents of a mile. Depends who you hold. Like the Chazon Ish says that Amma is 2 feet. The Reb Chaim Noah holds that an Amma is 1.5 feet. So a meal is 2,000 Amos. So if it's 2 feet, then it's 4,000 Amos, 4,000 feet. If it's 1.5 feet, then it is 3,000, right? 1.5 times 2,000 is 3,000. Right? So it's either 3,000 or 4,000 feet, depending on whose perspective you take. Now, the question is how to reconcile these two Gemaras. And there are two ways of reconciling them, which are the two basic approaches as to how we determine when dark occurs. And yesterday we mentioned that there is a machloket between the Chachmei Yisrael and Chachmei Umos Olam, where the sun goes at night, right? According to the Chachmei Yisrael, there is a dome in the sky, and the sun... Well, it's not drawn to scale exactly. And the sun goes behind the dome at night, it comes around the other side. Okay, so according to the Chachmei Yisrael, it goes like this. Okay, according to the Chachmei Umos Olam, however, the sun rotates completely around the earth, and it goes like this. Now, the way Rabbeinu Tam reconciles the two Gemaras in Shabbos and Pesachim is by saying that let's look at the dome. Okay, let's look at the dome. The sun, when it reaches our visible sunset, starts going straight out, right? And then it curves up around the dome. The way we understood yesterday, is that the 90 minutes to 120 minutes is the time it takes from the sun to go from here to here. But Rabbeinu Tam says, no, don't say that way. It can't be. Because even when it's out here, it's not completely dark, because the sun out here can still shine rays towards the earth. You know, faint rays, but it still has some rays. It's only completely dark when the sun goes an appreciable amount behind the dome. And at that point, the rays of the sun don't peek out from under in a visible way, and therefore, it's fully dark. So Rabbeinu Tam says, I'll tell you, this 90 to 120 minutes is talking about the total amount of time it takes for the sun to get from this point where it starts setting until the point behind the dome, let's say it's over here for argument's sake, where you no longer see the sun shining on the earth. However, what's the three-quarters of the meal in Masechta Shabbos? The three-quarters of the meal in Masechta Shabbos are the time from the point which it turns the corner here till the time that absolute darkness occurs. This is the three-quarters meal. Again, it's not drawn to scale. This is three-quarters, and therefore, by association, this is anywhere from 3.25 to 4.25. You see that? In other words, the distance which it travels straight is a fraction of the 4 and the 5, or the 5, and the distance which it travels up behind the dome is a fraction of the four or the five. And if this is 3/4 of a meal or half a meal or whatever it is, depending on which approach the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos you take, then you can deduct that, I mean, from the four or five, depending on which approach you take, and you will come to this number, which is the number which it takes 3/4 to 4, 3 1/4 to 4 1/4, which it takes the sun to go directly out. Now,
that's where you get 72.
What?
That's where you get 72, the 90 minus the...
No, well, actually, it doesn't really work that way, because the 72 would then not be enough, right? Because 72 would not be fully dark. So the number 72, were we to take that way, yes, you could get the 72 that way, but then the 72 would be very bad. Because the 72 would indicate not when it's actually dark, but merely when the process begins of going around the back of the earth, of the dome.
So we should, in other words, we should be waiting the other 18 minutes.
Right. Now, the thing is that according to Rabbeinu Tam, the major chiddush of Rabbeinu Tam is that the visible sunset, which occurs right here, is meaningless. Meaningless. It has no halakhic ramification. Because Chazal tell us that Veinash Moshos, twilight, only starts 3/4 of a meal before absolute darkness. So when's absolute darkness? Back here, right? So therefore, the only sunset which is meaningful in halakha is this sunset. Meaningful. This is the sunset when it goes behind, that's the meaningful sunset. Now, there's a major application, of course, to this, which is that, let's say, it's Erev Shabbos. It's Friday afternoon, right? And you are running very late, right? So it's now after the sun has set to the visible eye.
Shkia.
Right,
Shkia. What we call Shkia.
According to Rabbi Natan, you are welcome to continue doing Malacha for a substantial amount of time more. Let's say taking the 90 minutes, like you said, you can still do Malacha for another 72 minutes. Mm-hmm. Because for another 72 minutes, the Shkia, which is the meaningful Shkia, has not occurred. After those 72 minutes have elapsed, then you enter twilight, and for the next 18 minutes you can't do Malacha because of the stopping. Because Benesh Moshe is special, maybe it's day, maybe it's night. So therefore, at that point in time, we have to desist from Malacha and wait until your 90 minutes are up, which is the time when actually night occurs. If you take the 72 minutes, which is commonly used, although we don't yet know the source for it, then it comes out to kind of a weird number. You take 72 and divide it by, how does it work again? 72, that's 18 minutes, right? 18 minutes divided by, let's take the 4. So it's divided by 4 is 18, and then you have to get 3/4 of 18. So that's 8.
13 and a half.
What?
13 and a half.
So 3/4 of 18 is 13 and a half. So that means that if this is 72, then you take off this 13, over here, 72.
Gives us 58
and a half. This is 13.5. So this point here happens 58.5 minutes after our sunset. Now, in the old country, meaning in Hungary, they used to do Malacha on Erev Shabbos until 58.5 minutes after Shkia. This actually was, they held Rabbeinu Tam, Halacha L'maisa, meaning that they would continue to do Malacha well after the sunset. They only stopped doing Malacha on Erev Shabbos during that time, when they moved to America and were confronted with the Lithuanians, who thought that they were wacko. So therefore, at that point, they stopped doing Malacha. However, a major vestige of this Shita is the Hasidic custom of davening Mincha well after Shkia. Right? Because according to the Hasidim, it's still, like Rabbeinu Tam, Mincha time for approximately 60 minutes after Shkia. Even though from our perspective, it's black outside. From their perspective, it's nevertheless not considered to be, but the end of Mincha time till 60 minutes, and in fact, if you go to Haredim, I haven't tried the visions, but if you go to the Haredim, the Satmar Shtibel here, they will be davening Mincha until 60 minutes after Shkia, and only then do the first Marav and Yonim begin. Okay? Because it's based on Rabbeinu Tam. Yeah.
Is
I suggest you go to Fatmer and ask. Wouldn't that be a good idea? Ask the next Fatmer you happen to see what he believes about the dome. He probably doesn't know about the dome, but ask him to see what he says. Now,
Do they hold this way? I know they hold this day Sunday through Thursday. Do they hold this way Erev Shabbos also?
No, I don't. Do they hold for Mincha?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. They'll have Mincha after Shkia, but they won't do Malacha after Shkia.
Oh, okay. That's okay.
Because it's a Mincha.
Because it's a Suffolk, right?
Yeah.
If this is passed on from Sinai, because it comes from...
It was passed on to Sinai, it came from Mincha. Yeah.
No, but the dome thing, which is...
The dome thing wasn't passed down from Sinai either.
But it was in the... It has, like, halachic ramifications, which means that it had to be passed on from Sinai.
Why?
Isn't that what you said yesterday?
Can you just make it up?
What?
Can you just make it up and we can get halacha from it?
What do you mean? That was a common scientific theory at the time.
We make halacha right now, a common scientific theory.
He had a difficulty. Rabbeinu Tam had a difficulty. He had a contradiction between the Gemara and Shabbos. And more himself. In order to resolve this, the Chazal didn't necessarily have this difficulty. He has to use this time in the moment. But in order for Rabbeinu Tam to resolve this difficulty, he decided this is the resolution. He based it on the dome theory. Okay? This was a way in which Rabbeinu Tam reconciled two conflicting Gemaras. On the basis of that, he came to a conclusion that many different times followed. He didn't get it from Chazal. He understood that this was how to reconcile two Gemaras. The Gaonim, on the other hand, who lived before Rabbeinu Tam, the Gaonim, however, lived Rabbeinu Tam, held, in fact, that the Chachmim was all right. The non-Jews are right. First of all, it was the Gemara seems to concede the point to the Chachmim was all that they're correct, that the sun goes around the bottom of the earth at night. Moreover, astronomically, it has been proven that there is another side of the world which gets light, so therefore the sun must be going around and around and around. So they say, how can you reconcile the Gemara Shabbos from Gemara Pesachim? They say, this is the way to reconcile it. There are two parameters of dark. One parameter of dark is the dark at which Motzei Shabbos occurs. Another parameter of dark is when absolute darkness occurs. Now, the Gemara in Shabbos, in fact, is talking about, halacha. The Gemara in Pesachim is talking about work. The Gemara there says that people used to work from alos ha-shachar till tesa kohonim, which means they used to work from the first glimmer of light till the last glimmer of light faded from the sea. So therefore, the Gemara in Pesachim has nothing to do with halacha. It does have other halacha ramifications, like how much work you owe your employer, but basically it has nothing to do with halachas of the times of day, but rather has to do with other issues which have to do with the work day and so on and so forth. And perhaps that has to do with the geographical calculations one makes about the heavens and their size, etc., etc. But the halachic tesa kohavim, which Chazal were mekabel from Sinai, is the Tesa Kochavim of the Sefer Shabbos. In fact, there's a Rishon, Maram al-Sakar, who's a late Rishon, but maybe early Akhmar is very debatable, when his tshuva, he comes down very strong on Rabbeinu Tam, and he's Rabbeinu Tam's approach, and he says, clearly, Rabbeinu Tam must be wrong, because science has proven that that is not the case. So therefore, there's no reason anybody should ever follow Rabbeinu Tam, whether Lekula or Lechumra, everybody should always follow the Shita of the Gaonim, which is the Shita of the Gemara in Shabbos. Well, give me one more second before you ask any questions, if you have any. Now, that's a big problem with Rabbeinu Tam Shita. So all these people, keeping Rabbeinu Tam, you know, are they absolute nitwits? Are they completely misguided? So you could say yes, you know, that might be the option. But there is another option, which is the Tesis Rid. The Tesis Rid is also Rishon, and Tesis Rid, it seems, knew somehow that Rabbeinu Tam's astronomy was off, and therefore, he says, nevertheless, I have connected Rabbeinu Tam based on the correct astronomical facts. And this goes back to something we mentioned way back on Sunday, which is that the question is, which area of the sky becoming dark determines that night has occurred? Is it the eastern part of the sky, which becomes dark early? Is it the overhead part of the sky, which becomes dark late? Is it the western horizon, which becomes dark much later? And yes, it is true that until very, very late after the sun has set, you can still see light on the western horizon. Now let me make this clear to you. Let me make this, bring this home in a graphic way. This actually is a wonderful book. Everybody should own it. For the Halachic Times for Home and Travel, Smarni Ayom BaHalacha. It's put out by Professor Leo Levy, who's a very big Talmid Chacham and a scientist to boot. And in this book he has also his article in English and in Hebrew on astronomical aspects of twilight in Halacha, which is a brilliant synopsis of all the approaches, and I can't recommend this book enough. Okay?
Can
I don't get any money for that. What?
Can I take a look at it real quick?
Take a look at it even slowly. But I wanted to look about these tables. These tables. Which actually, when I saw them for the first time, made me realize what's going on here. Which is, now I only printed from January to June, but I took two locations. January to June in Moscow and in Paris. Okay? Now Jews live in, they continue to live in Europe, in areas which are actually more northerly than Moscow and Paris. Vilna is more northerly than Moscow or Paris. But Rabbeinu Tam lived around the latitude of Paris, right? And many of the Jews in Eastern Europe lived around the latitude of Moscow, right? Now, if you take a look here, let's start with Paris, for simplicity's sake. If you take a look at Paris, you will see that the table in the middle of the year, towards the beginning of the summer, has blank spaces. You see those blank spaces? And those blank spaces occur by Rabbeinu Tam's nightfall and the early Halos HaShachar, which is actually, as we'll talk about, Rabbeinu Tam reflected on the other side. In other words, you know, the equivalent of Rabbeinu Tam here, over here, at the beginning of the day. So what does that mean, that those numbers are missing? What it means is that in these locations, in the summer, for a good deal of the time, beginning in the spring, it doesn't get fully dark. It's never fully dark. Now imagine living in this place, right, where it's never fully dark, and trying to figure out when is Shabbos over, right, in the middle of the summer. You have major problems. Not only that, on the western horizon, you will definitely see light almost around the clock, because the sun never completely fades beneath the horizon the way it does in our latitudes. And this is a remarkable thing, because, you know, you think New York is north, farther south. New York is much further south. Even Montreal and Toronto are much further south than any locale where the northern European Jews live. Berlin, which is relatively south, you know, also has its problem. Certainly London, which is further north than Paris, has its problem. And if you take a look at Moscow, which is on the other side, the problem already begins in May. Not only that, you lose more columns. You lose the dawn, according to the Rambam, which is the later dawn, which we'll explain. All these columns we'll explain, but not gradually. But you lose that too. At some point, you lose many different times a day. And therefore, when you think about Rabbeinu Tam in that context, you understand very well that what we might not perceive to be true because we live in more southerly latitudes was certainly the case where Rabbeinu Tam lived. Conversely, vis-a-vis us, those of you who have been in Eretz Yisrael, know that it becomes dark much quicker in Eretz Yisrael than it does here. Because Eretz Yisrael is more southerly than we are. And just a little bit more southerly. But that's enough that twilight is significantly shorter, and that here in America, many, many people keep 72 minutes. In Israel, it's almost unheard of. Why? Because it's preposterous. It's ludicrous. You go out, and well before 72 minutes, it's dark. So therefore, there's a very, very major difference depending on the latitude in which you find yourself. The same thing is reflected in the southern hemisphere, of course, the other way around. I think towns in Australia, cities in Australia, don't have this issue. I don't know about South Africa, I didn't check. But certainly the more southerly you get in the southern hemisphere, the more likely you're going to encounter this problem. Just you won't have it in June, you'll have it in January instead. Right? Because the seasons are reversed there. So that's clearly, yeah.
Does the Gaon say that, what did they say about Rabbeinu Tam, that you can't use any of his any of his halachas at all. I don't care what you said.
No, there's man in halachas. Not whatever you said in other areas of halachas.
Well, I don't know. It's true that he's like he's got a problem.
No, but I just explained to you that Rabbeinu Tam is correct from his perspective, certainly, where he lived. Rabbeinu Tam didn't go to Bavel, where the Gonim lived, and the Gonim lived in Bavel, which is much more temperate and much closer, the nightfall occurs much closer, never went to northern France. So therefore, probably the two of them, at the time, didn't have the advantage which we have of being able to look at these tables and understand, you know, the relative difference depending on how northerly your latitude was. Is that clear?
Yeah, but even still, believing in this dome of...
But then you can hold like this as a serene. I have to explain. You don't need to come onto the dome in order to have the Rabbeinu Tam's halachic perspective be correct. Bear in mind. This is what I tried to say yesterday.
How did he do that again?
What?
How did he say Rabbeinu Tam's opinion without having the dome again?
The light on the western horizon.
Oh, okay.
Bear in mind, everybody is talking not on the basis ultimately of scientific theory. That's what I'm trying to bring out now. Everybody's talking based on the phenomena which they see in their location, day after day, night after night. So it doesn't really matter whether the sun goes up behind the dome at night or doesn't. The reality is, the western horizon in the northerly countries is light for a long, long time after the sun sets, which is what the Tosafot Sarid is saying. And the western horizon in the more southerly countries is dark for a much shorter time than than the northern horizon, which is what the Shita Tzadka Einim reflects. The fact that there's a scientific theory behind the amount of light which is perceived in the sky pales by comparison. It really doesn't have to do with the scientific theory you use, but rather the amount of visible light which you can perceive.
So which was passed on from Sinai?
Neither.
So...
Now, the Gaonim Shita was passed on from Sinai, I assume. But that, you know, that won't do Rabbeinu Tam any good, because in his location, the time of the Gaonim is actually much longer. And it may never, you know, he never had that full darkness which you would expect to find. But I don't know necessarily, you know, I answered you glibly, that the Gaonim Shita was passed down from the Sinai. When Chazal have two Gemaras, which conflict, such as Shabbos and Sukkim, right? And they don't tell us the reconciliation, so we have no way of knowing what came down from the Sinai. There's much knowledge which we lost, right? Even Chazal say they lost much knowledge, which was why before the times of the early Tanoim, there was no Machlokes in Am Yisrael, because traditions were maintained and nobody forgot anything. Along the time of the early Tanoim, people started forgetting. And therefore, it's entirely possible that these shittas which Chazal has, nobody knows which one is the authentic one which comes from Sinai, and therefore left the Paskin on the basis of what we see we find in the Chazal.
But, so what do we believe
clear?
Comes from Sinai?
What?
What do we believe comes from Sinai?
You're entitled to believe neither comes from Sinai. No.
Anything.
What?
Anything.
In this issue. You're being difficult.
I know, but I'm trying to understand this.
He's just really upset with Sinai.
Yeah.
So what do we have to believe comes from Sinai? Not this.
Tarish B'Tzav. Anything which you find in the... Tanakh, and Tzeil Chamish Chumshei Torah. Even that doesn't come from Sinai, it comes from the desert, right? The 40 years from the desert. Right? What came from Sinai, I think I told you yesterday, was everything up to the end of Vayikra, right? That was given at Mount Sinai over the course of several months, almost a year, I think, they were at Sinai. Then everything was given afterwards, but the things which were given to Moshe Rabbeinu have the equivalent validity or legitimacy as things which are given at Mount Sinai itself. So therefore, until the end of Chumash, we believe everything is divine. We also believe that the principles of Torah Shebaal Peh are divine as well. But you can't, and we also believe that many of the statements of Torah Shebaal Peh were anticipated by earlier generations, it's just they weren't recorded. In fact, the Gemara says that explicitly in Masechta Sukkah, it says that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was one of the great Tanoim, was familiar with Habayos Abaye Verova. Was familiar with the pathways of Abaye and Rava, who were paradigmic Amoraim, which came several hundred years after him. So how did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai know about Abaye the Rava? The answer is Abaye the Rava represented Gemara, and, you know, various different issues which are discussed in the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was very familiar with many of those issues and had the acumen to deal with them, but they weren't recorded in his time. They were recorded later on when Abai and Rava reopened the issue. They had, at that point, however, they didn't necessarily have a tradition of Yochanan ben Zakkai, otherwise they wouldn't be arguing about it. So therefore, forgetfulness sets in over time.
So which part of the Talmud are we supposed to believe came from Tana?
Actually, the Mishnah is supposed to incorporate either stuff which comes from Sinai or things were are as authoritative as they come from Sinai.
So this
and therefore, thing, since the Mishnah records arguments as well.
So this dome thing.
What?
It's
not in the Mishnah. It's not in the Mishnah. But even the Mishnah, there are issues which are under contention, right?
Right.
Mayor Reb Yehuda. So what the Chazal say, and as a rule, but there are many exceptions to this rule, is that it's Zerah Shava. You know, when you have the Midah Zerah Shava, where you have one word the same in two areas, that school of thought which had such Zerah Shava was received the generation after generation, because Ein Adam Dan Zerah Shava Miatvo. A person cannot generate a Zerah Shava on his own. The problem with that is we find many times in Shas the people are generating Zerah Shavas on their own. Right? So how do we understand that? So there are two types of Zerah Shavah. Obviously there's the one which is authoritative, which is the one which must be passed down from generation to generation, because otherwise many words in Torah appear in many locations. How do you know which words to connect and say this is the same as that? But then the Gemara has issues where it wants to find a source for something, and then it has speculative Zerah Shavas. They're not authoritative. There's speculation as perhaps the source for a certain known halacha maybe comes from this Gezeirah Shavah. Okay? So besides that, there are relatively few things which come down from Sinai explicitly. There are even the Midos Shatur Nidreshes Kohen. Even the tools by which the Torah is darshan, which people say every morning, some people say every morning, not me, at the end of Karbanos. Are you familiar with that? Have you ever gotten to the end of Karbanos? Any of you? Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Rishlosh, and Midos Shatur Nidreshes?
No.
No clue, right?
Yeah.
Because you're in yeshiva, so you don't know anything about davening. So you take a look at the end of Karbanos, before Mizmor Shir, then there is incorporated into the Siddur a brisa which expounds the 13 tools which Rabbi Shmuel had for expounding the Torah Shabbat, right? So those, you would think, come down from Sinai. They do, except that there's agreement about them too. Because Rabbi Shmuel, it is known, darshan the entire Torah with the principles of klal prat uklal, generalization and specification, and klal prat, generalization and specification, whereas Rabbi Akiva, who disputes him very often in Shas, approached the whole Torah from the perspective of ribui and miut, inclusion and exclusion,
right,
which are not the same tools. If you ever get to a sugya which discusses ribui and miut and klal prat, you'll see that they work differently. But what there are similar in respect, that they approach the text of the Torah in similar ways. It's just that what they derive from the text is then different based on whether you learn it as a ribui miut or as a klal prat. But we assume that those midos that turn to Jewish plan in a general way, the approach to Torah Shabbat Peh, Torah Shabbat Ksav, to coax the halacha of Torah Shabbat Peh out of it, that came down from Sinai. So Hashem said, here's the Torah Shabbat Ksav. And he told Moshe lots of stuff, but Moshe didn't tell us that much, and we forgot a lot of what Moshe told us. And he said, here are the tools. And these are the tools which you will use to develop halacha out of Torah Shabbat Ksav. Is that reasonably clear?
So he did not tell us what the halacha is actually worth.
No, he wouldn't tell us what the halacha is actually worth. Right. And Moshe, just like Hashem did not come down to Mount Sinai and say, you know, this is, you should know it's mutter or also to open a refrigerator on Shabbos. At least I don't believe that.
So why can't you hold by whichever rabbi you think?
You can. They said you can't. You have to be legitimate rabbis. Though.
Well, you have to follow the Shulchan Aruch, and if the two rabbis said two different things, and in the Shulchan
which
Aruch,
two rabbis?
I don't know. When they talk about
which century? 20th century? 15th century? What are we talking about?
Rabbi.
15th century.
Huh?
Which century are you talking about? Which epoch?
The Shulchan Aruch.
There's only one Shulchan Aruch.
Yeah, so that.
Okay.
Right.
So that before or after the Shulchan Aruch now?
Before. He got his laws from the Gemara, or the Talmud.
Who?
Aruch.
No, he didn't.
The
Shulchan Aruch had a famous approach. Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Karo, had a famous approach to halacha, which is that there were three major Rishonim, which there were. The Rambam, the Rosh, The Rambam, the Rif actually comes first. The Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. Those are the three major poskim among the Rishonim. There are many other commentators. Rashi was a great commentator. Tosfos was a great commentator, right? Rabbeinu Hanana, who was earlier than was a great commentator. But those are the big three poskim. So he, in the Shulchan Aruch, generally speaking, he follows two out of three. That's
so why can't you follow which one
every
of
two out of
three you want?
Excuse me?
Why can't you follow which one is out of
you
the
could
three?
Until the Shulchan Aruch was written. And the Shulchan Aruch was written, the Shulchan Aruch has, now, Ramah, who's our Ashkenazic addition to the Shulchan Aruch, he wasn't so enamored with the Mechaber's approach, and he gave significant credence to the Rishonim other than those three. Specifically, the Northern European Rishonim, like the Mordechai and the Ma'aril, and others who Rabbi Yosef Karo didn't really take into account. But one, however, the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah together were universally accepted by Am Yisrael. And we have principle from the Rambam. Once universal acceptance occurs, that's it. So that becomes a stage in the development of Halacha. Just like you can't reopen the issues which are in the Talmud, because there's universal acceptance of the Talmud as the authoritative law book of the Jewish people, so too, except you know, the first couple of generations there were people who did it, but generally speaking, you cannot now reopen what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. It's a closed book. I shouldn't say closed, it's not the word I'm looking for. It's signed and sealed. And therefore, you can't go back and reopen that because it was universal acceptance. There was universal acceptance in the Rambam. There's not universal acceptance in the Mishnah Berurah, although maybe someday there will be. So theoretically, you can come and argue in the Mishnah Berurah. You'd be a fool. But theoretically, you could come. Maybe someday it will be a very big time. Call him, and that'll be okay if you argue the Mishnah Berurah, perhaps. But right now, you know, me and you, if we argue the Mishnah Berurah, we're some idiots, right? So therefore, but theoretically, the Mishnah Berurah has not achieved universal recognition, so therefore we could argue the Mishnah Berurah at this point.
I thought the Mishnah Berurah...
The halacha that was passed down from Sinai.
You're fascinated by this, aren't you?
Huh? Yeah.
Okay.
So if there was... So you're saying there wasn't halacha passed down from Sinai? There were just tools to get the...
Oh, the famous Medrash in Yerushalmi, actually. Yerushalmi says that at Mount Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu was given on every issue. In Torah, 49 ways to say it's usher and 49 ways to say it's mutter. 49 ways to say it's tohar and 49 ways to say it's tummy. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, so what am I supposed to do with this? Hashem said, it's given over to the chachomim of each and every generation to work with these perspectives and determine the right perspective for their final place. So yes, Torah has many, many possibilities.
So there's not
There's no one monolithic halacha. Again, until universal acceptance.
But if the Mishnah says something and it's not disputed in the Mishnah, like there's no conversation in the Mishnah, the Mishnah just flat out states X, 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 Y, you know?
Yeah,
and it's flat out states. Are you to assume that that is really capturing the oral law passed down by Moshe Rabbeinu, and that is...
No, not necessarily. It could be capturing the oral law as decided by the Chachamim. Bear in mind, when the Sanhedrin, there was the Sanhedrin, they had legislative powers. You know, they could legislate laws, we can't really do that nowadays, they could legislate laws which are maybe the basis of the Mishnah, not necessarily from Sinai, and this is the law which they made. For example, you know, things like Kol Yisroel, right, for people who keep it. The fact that it's an issue, it's all rabbinic, not a Torah issue, right, and many things like that, which, davening, it's not Torah, the davening d'oraisa, there might not even be a mitzvah to davening d'oraisa every day. If there is, you say, according to many poskim, with Moda Ami. All the rest of davening and all the issues that come up with davening, they're all rabbinic, right? So the Mishnah has lots of stuff.
Not Shemavit.
Careful saying that around the yeshiva. Listen.
I'll make some nice dirty
every day. I'll go to Minka and say it then.
Don't worry, I'll be up 9:29
to say Moda Ami. And
Shema. Yeah. Shema is the right one.
Oh, it is right.
Yeah.
Not
twice a day.
Yeah,
the fish
is not
like
that. Fair enough. It's more of a
representation
of the rest
of the
day. I'm sorry? Why can't we come up with one that allows...
Go ahead. But why can't we hold
us? Why can't we?
No. You can. You can start a religion. You can start a religion if you want. What do you want to call your religion?
I don't know.
So you call your own religion called Sebel, and they said on the precept, you know, say this is Torah, and I'm adding on to Torah. You have to make that clear. The Chazal say, if you're adding on to Torah, even that which is the Rabbanan has to be clearly defined.
But
to
you
that
can't.
Which
wait, you can make your own religion?
No, as long as you don't claim it's the given was given as Mount Sinai.
No, but I thought you can't.
Right?
Add.
Yeah,
but
the claim is Mount Sinai. No, you're going to say, I had this December 2003. I now would like to attract you as adherents and members of my religion, which has additional precepts A, B, and C besides precepts of the Torah. You can go and do that.
But you,
as long as you clarify, you made them up.
Can't you exclude some of those other things which you leave? These guys came up with, and there's nothing wrong with them, but we don't know about it.
Not the universal acceptance thing. That's what you brought. Right. But that's what you can't evade.
So
again,
Mr. Brewer, you don't have to worry about.
Right, you can go back to the Mr. Brewer if you want. So the but you can't avoid the what it says in the Mishnayot, what it says in Shas. But it says in Shulchan Aruch.
Which means everything should be very complicated.
So is that how, like, all the Hasidim and, like, all those different, like...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Misnagia would probably say, real Misnagia would probably say the Hasidim, they invented their own religion too, right? So it's just, they have also some additional stuff.
Added a new line into the Kabbalah.
Is this how they did it?
No, they didn't, they can't claim that they're authentic, that they're not...
They're the original.
Their interpretation of Judaism is the correct one.
So then I won't show up at all next week, and then when all the rabbis ask me, where were you?
Right,
it's a religious
say
holiday.
That's the thing, our religious holidays don't...
It's okay, because Rabbi Bechtofer said it was okay.
What do you mean
the
correct one?
There's
no correct one.
What?
There's no correct one. There's the original one, but they're all correct. You're saying... You just said that the Hasidim claim that theirs is the original one.
They're authentic, and it's original.
Authentic, but you said that you can come up with your own, and that's just as valid and legitimate.
True, but they hold that they are an authentic interpretation of what
theirs
is all about.
There's the truth. That,
right.
That's the
remarkable thing. I don't think, you know, in the Hasidic coloring books, they draw Moshe Rabbeinu with a strangle. Right? They draw Moshe Rabbeinu with a strangle. Avraham Avinu looks like he stepped out of business, right? They're saying to see a coloring book, that's what it looks like. I don't think they're necessarily being frivolous. I think they really feel that whatever is Hasidim do is actually what the Avos did. Just, you know,
that's what
we don't have a picture.
Has been passed on.
Right.
So they
have
it too. I mean, we learned that like all of our rabbinic laws, that's what the Avos did.
Yeah, but we don't draw the Avos with black hats.
So then why do they go to such lengths to explain, so when the Torah explicitly states, you
because
know, we go through all these, you know,
because
gymnastics.
We assume that all laws, this is what the Rambam Lashon says, by the way, we're going to spend all next week on this, because we didn't get anywhere today. The Rambam has to explain all these tables.
It's good stuff, though.
The Rambam Lashon said that, remember, you can't be late for that. The Rambam Lashon said that the others, being the Chaim Kol Tarku Lashon Nikma, was based on their intuiting all halacha. Meaning it wasn't given over to them, and they didn't decree it. But rather, if you have the right intuition, which none of us have, but obviously the Avos did, that's what made them the Avos, they can intuit all aspects of the Torah.
Why don't you say that theirs was the same thing as how they, like, just as the Chazal came up and derived the laws?
That's an intuition, right?
Yeah.
But they have different values, so they intuit what's happening. Would you be able to intuit all the halachos which you don't know yet? But they were. You understand the difference? I mean, theoretically, you could, but then it would be one of the halachos. And that would be very impressive. As it stands today, you're not one of them. So your intuition is not regarded. With all due respect, your intuition is not taken as definitive in any way, shape, or form.
But the Mishnah Berurah is.
Yes. Actually, Mishnah Berurah is a poor example. Mishnah Berurah did not do stuff on intuition. He always did things based on text.
He works for
the
Oracle.
The Oracle Shulchan is more intuitive.
The Rambam has
intuitive statements. It's interesting because there is a statement, I think from Chaim Volozhin as well. He says that it's harder to argue on something a Rishon says based on intuition than something he says based on evidence. Because if he bases the statement on evidence, then you can dispute the evidence. You say, this evidence is not necessarily, you know, from my perspective, correct. But how can you dispute the intuition of a Rishon? That's claiming that you have the same acumen that the have.
Which you can prove him wrong.
You can't prove his intuition wrong.
It's truly based on intuition, not on you know, like Ram said sometimes, he royally. Seems to me that this should be that halacha, right? He says it's harder to argue the Rambam to be royally than it is to argue on the Rambam evidence.
If you found proof that this is wrong, how can you trust any of the Rambam's intuitions?
But you won't find proof of that sort.
But
I thought you can't add or detract from the law.
You won't. The Rambam knew much more than you did.
He didn't know about this other Gemara or something.
It almost never happens.
Almost
never happens. I don't know that it didn't happen. I'm sure it's the only thing almost, because maybe it did, but I don't know that it does. If it happened once, it's no indication that it would happen again. Lightning doesn't necessarily strike twice in the same location.
No, but if it happens once, it means his intuition is wrong.
No. Once.
Well,
nobody's infallible.
Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock instead of speaking to it. That doesn't mean he was wrong all the time.
Part of human condition is being fallible.
But then, if you trust that all these things are like divine, or like his intuition is like pretty good, and he makes mistakes...
We're just saying it's much better than yours.
Yeah, it's much better than mine.
We're not saying it's divine. We're saying it's much better than your intuition. Until you can prove that your intuition is as good as the Rambam, which means you have to know all the Rambam. So then, we're not going to trust your intuition, neither should you.
Within 2 weeks.